Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. British law finally says all consensual sex is created equal. MTV Real World housemates remember Pedro and me. And Sir Ian McKellen chats up X-Men, Lord of the Rings, and his website. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Chase Schulte.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 2nd, 2000. The long struggle in Britain to equalize the age of consent for sex between men with that for heterosexual acts finally ended this week. The government invoked the rarely used Parliament Act to override the House of Lords' repeated rejection of equalization. The House of Commons has repeatedly approved the move by large margins since the Labour Party won its sizable majority there in 1997. When Britain first decriminalized consensual sex between men more than 30 years ago, the age of consent was set at 21. In 1995, a move to equalization ended in a compromise that lowered the gay age of consent to 18 instead. Now it will be 16 in England and Wales and 17 in Northern Ireland. Conservative opponents continued their resistance to the very last, including announcing a survey finding that even Labour supporters in Prime Minister Tony Blair's home district opposed both equalization and its passage by means of the Parliament Act by more than 70%. Britain's Church of England, Roman Catholic, and Muslim religious leaders all signed a published letter of protest calling anal intercourse the most dangerous of sexual practices. Although opponents insisted that their concern was to protect young people from sexual exploitation, activists' concerns were for the hundreds of young people who have been treated as criminals for the same acts heterosexuals could perform legally. Activists hailed the move as a breakthrough. The National Gay and Lesbian Advocacy Group Stonewall's executive director Angela Mason said, "When the history books come to be written, I believe it will be seen as the moment when this country finally began to change, when lesbians and gay men started to take their place as equal members of society."
The Boy Scouts of America's policy of excluding gays is costing it more and more as communities across the U.S. reconsider their relationships with the Scouts. This week, the Los Angeles City Council voted unanimously to enforce its non-discrimination policies with respect to the Scouts. Scouts will now have to pay the same fees as others for the use of city facilities, and the Los Angeles Police Department will take over the Explorers program it's run with the Scouts for nearly 40 years. All city departments will review their contracts with the group. Openly lesbian city council member and state assembly member-elect Jackie Goldberg said, "While the Supreme Court has given them the right to discriminate, we will not." Also this week, Chancellor Harold Levy, a former scout himself, announced that New York City schools will not enter into any new contracts with the Scouts and will not sponsor scout troops. Three of the 32 school districts within the New York City system had already prohibited their schools from sponsoring scout troops. Some smaller cities in the U.S. have also determined to end Scouts' sweetheart deals for use of facilities and access to public school students.
Tokyo may become the first city in Asia to protect gays and lesbians from discrimination after reinserting sexual orientation in its draft human rights guidelines. Gays and lesbians had been included in the process of developing those guidelines, but when the draft was first published for public comment in June, the category was omitted. The deletion was justified with claims that Tokyo's citizens do not fully understand homosexuals, and Tokyo's governor Shintaro Ishihara asked a press conference how they were discriminated against. Gay and lesbian activists and allies lobbied hard for inclusion, calling on the international community for support as well. The pressure convinced the city government to put the sexual orientation category back in.
There was an advance for gay and lesbian couples in South Africa last week as the parliament gave them a spousal exemption from inheritance taxes, retroactive to the establishment of the post-apartheid constitution in 1994. That constitution was the first in the world to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation, but many laws and government policies have yet to be made consistent with it. Under the newly passed Revenue Laws Amendment Bill, the Estate Duties Act redefines spouse to include a permanent same-sex life relationship.
Germany's bill to officially register gay and lesbian life partners was rubber-stamped this week by the national legislature's upper house, the Bundesrat. But a second government bill to attach a number of valuable benefits to registration was stalled there. Next year, gay and lesbian couples in Germany will be able to register their partnerships and be recognized for purposes including medical decisions, tenancy, insurance, spousal support, and even residency rights for the foreign partners in binational couples. But marital tax breaks, health coverage, and pensions are among the changes to the tax, welfare, and labor codes that the conservative-dominated Bundesrat was unwilling to extend. One of the unpleasant ironies this creates is that life partners will have standing to inherit from their partners absent a will, but will not get the inheritance tax breaks married couples enjoy.
New Zealand's parliament has approved access to the courts for property division when domestic partners split up. Any couple of at least 3 years standing will be covered by the law unless they arrange a different contract of their own. The bill gives equal standing to married and unmarried heterosexual couples and to gay and lesbian couples. The basic guideline for property division is a 50-50 split, although the courts have leeway to consider a number of factors, including duration of the relationship, whether there is a sexual relationship, sharing of responsibilities, children, and the economic status of the partners after the split. The Labour government plans to introduce a broader bill for legal recognition of gay and lesbian couples within a year.
The Australian state of Victoria is also taking a giant step forward, as its government has introduced an omnibus bill to amend more than 40 laws to give gay and lesbian couples the same legal status as unmarried heterosexual couples. A second bill will follow in the new year to amend more than 30 other state laws to the same effect. The legislation is based on recommendations by the State Equal Opportunity Commission. The first round of changes will empower one partner to make medical decisions for a disabled partner, will extend spousal tax exemptions to property transfers between partners, will qualify partners for pension benefits, and will give partners standing to inherit from each other in the absence of a will. Political parties in the state parliament are still reviewing the proposal and have not yet taken positions.
Political success has come to another of India's transgender hijras, with her election as mayor of a city best known as a publishing center for Hindu scripture. Asha Devi ran as an independent and trounced candidates from the major parties to become mayor of Gorakhpur in the state of Uttar Pradesh by a large margin. The hijra, most of whom are not castrated despite the common translation of eunuch, include transgenders, crossdressers, and gay men. Long kept on the margins of society as an outlaw group, they've begun to win mainstream recognition. Devi is actually the second hijra to win an Indian mayoralty this year, and last year a hijra was elected to a state legislative assembly.
In U.S. politics, openly lesbian Southern California Democrat Jerry Shipsky this week conceded to incumbent Republican Congressmember Steve Horn. Shipsky had hoped that the full vote tally, including absentee and so-called provisional ballots, would put her ahead of Horn, but the final count ended with Shipsky behind by about 1,700 votes, less than 1%. Shipsky could have requested a recount, but chose not to. In 1996, she lost another congressional race by an even slimmer 1,200 votes, but she's determined to try again in 2002.
Canada's federal elections this week offered few surprises. The Liberal Party was returned to power, making Jean Chrétien the first Canadian prime minister since 1945 to form three majority governments in a row. Both incumbent openly gay members of parliament were returned, the New Democratic Party's Sven Robinson from British Columbia's Burnaby Douglas by a small margin, and the Bloc Québécois' Réal Ménard from Quebec's Hochelaga-Maisonneuve by a large margin. Both of those gay-friendly parties lost some seats in the parliament, as did the Progressive Conservative Party. At least one transgender and six openly gay challengers lost their bids. But while the right-wing Canadian Alliance Party gained some seats, it did not make significant inroads beyond the western region of the country, which has always been its base, failing to fulfill its vision of uniting the right to defeat the Liberals.
And finally, Canadian Alliance Party leader Stockwell Day was rather hoist on his own petard with some humor from the satirical TV show This Hour Has 22 Minutes. Day, a lay preacher with an anti-gay record in the Alberta legislature, had proposed holding national referenda on difficult social issues such as abortion, the death penalty, and gay and lesbian civil rights. Although he waffled later, he initially called for the referenda to be binding and for them to be triggered by petitions from as little as 3% of the electorate. The TV show set up a petition reading, "We demand that the government of Canada force Stockwell Day to change his first name to Doris." With the help of its website, the show had collected twice the number of signatures required in less than a week. Clearly, the Alliance leader is familiar with the work of the former film and singing star who is his namesake-to-be, because when advised of the petition, he answered with the title of one of her greatest hits, "Que sera, sera."
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 2nd, 2000. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Chase Schulte.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Later in the program, from New Zealand, Sir Ian McKellen on his role as Gandalf in Lord of the Rings, the gay subtext in X-Men, and
such stuff as dreams are made on.
But first, many fans of MTV's The Real World believe the San Francisco cast was the best year of the series. Long before Survivor, the 1994 season gave the Big Brother treatment to Corey, Rachel, Mohammed, Pedro, Pam, Judd, and Puck. But it was the handsome, charismatic Pedro who emerged as a fan favorite, and it was Pedro who gave America an early look at a gay man battling AIDS. Judd Winnick, once the starving comic artist of the cast, has spent the last 2.5 years crafting Pedro and Me, a black-and-white comic book that looks at not only his time with Pedro Zamora, but also at what brought them and what kept them together through Zamora's illness. Our Steve Pride talks with Winnick and his fiancée, former MTV housemate Pam Ling, about friendship, loss, and Zamora's legacy.
The doctor said that I should go to the emergency room.
Don't be nervous. Just go. Just go so they can get it down. They'll give you something. They'll get it down. They'll check you out, and you can go home.
Judd was trying to convince me to, yes, this is something you should do. Go to the emergency room.
No. Nikki's going to take us to the hospital.
Pedro and I have become very, very close. Pedro's my friend.
What are you supposed to do when your friend's dying? And I'm probably just overreacting. And I'm probably just being paranoid. But what are you supposed to do when your friend's dying and there's nothing you can do about it?
Cartoonist Judd Winnick learned a lot more about the real world than he bargained for when he signed for a season of MTV's The Real World in 1994. Sharing a posh San Francisco house with six strangers, Winnick lived his life in front of a TV crew for 6 months. During that time, he met and fell in love with fellow housemate Pam Ling, the woman to whom he's now engaged, and he discovered that his roommate, Pedro Zamora, was HIV positive. Winnick chronicles the life and loss of Pedro Zamora in a new book.
I'm Judd Winnick, and I'm the author of Pedro Me, my experiences and my friendship with Pedro Zamora, who is my roommate from Real World San Francisco.
And with you today is one of the characters from the book.
I'm Pam Ling. I am Judd's fiance and another Real World housemate.
I have to admit, when I first got the book, I didn't know it was a graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And I opened it and went, oh my God,
it's a comic book.
But this really pushes the form.
Thank you. I really enjoy the fact that people say that they opened it up and went, oh, with a little heart sink of, oh, it's a comic. And I'm hoping that after you read this one, you'll actually, you know, can seek out other graphic novels. There's a tremendous amount of stuff out there. Comics have been around years and years and years, and this is not the only one that tells a story that isn't about guys in spandex beating each other up. On the other side of it, I don't think I could have told the story any other way. It's just my way of telling the story.
What was the genesis of this?
When Pedro took ill, which was less than 4 months after the show, he was supposed to begin a lecture series going around the country talking about AIDS and HIV. And he asked me to sit in for him for a couple of dates. This is before we had diagnosis or we had any idea what was going to happen. Later, you know, he was basically given 3 or 4 months to live. But I decided to keep lecturing. And then after he passed away, I kept doing AIDS education as well. Pam also came on tour for about 6 months and then went back to medical school. I did it for about a year and a half and just found it too emotionally draining. It just got really hard, you know, emotionally going over it again and again, what it was like to lose him. So I put it aside in favor of being a cartoonist again full time. I started doing a nationally syndicated comic strip, which I loved. I mean, I loved the idea of it. My whole life, this is what I wanted to do. This was my dream, to be one of those guys that every day you open up the newspaper and there you are. And after about a year, I really learned to hate it. I was very surprised that I wasn't enjoying it at all. And I think, well, I know, that was entirely about that I'd spent a year and a half doing something that I see as very important. And the comic strip seemed really trivial to me.
Tell me a little bit about Pedro Zamora.
Well, Pedro is a Cuban-born immigrant who came over here with his family in 1980 on the Mariel boat lift, which brought 125,000 Cuban refugees from Cuba to Florida. At the time, his family had been torn apart. Only half his family was allowed to come to the States. His older brothers and his sister were too close to the draft age, so they would have to be left behind. And he really described that as being the worst part of the journey, ignoring the fact what a nightmare it was to go through the experience of being trapped on this overcrowded boat with people who are seasick, stuck in pelting rain. He said it was much worse because his family was torn apart. And as the years went on, everyone had assumed the family would be reunited, that Castro would eventually fall, but it never happened. And with even that hanging over their heads, Pedro's mother got cancer around the time he was 11 or 12, and she would have passed away by the time he was 13. So his life was really fraught with a lot of traumas early on. He was a survivor from the beginning and had a lot to deal with. He'd always said one of the greatest significant experiences of his life was the loss of his mother. It created an immediate void for him. He felt closer to her than anyone in his life then and since. And at the time, that void was filled with sex. And we're talking about someone who was 14, 15 years old. Being this charismatic, beautiful kid, it was very easy for him to find many, many partners. But no one ever told him about AIDS. No one ever told him any kind of real way about AIDS. I mean, what did he always say? He always said that he'd imagined it, that it was something that affected older men.
Right, older men and drug users, and he described having an older physician coming to the classroom one day and talking about those people who get AIDS out there, but it didn't seem like anything that would actually affect him, and he didn't relate to it at all.
Right. I mean, he was an honor student, a jock. He didn't drink. He didn't smoke. You know, he had a great relationship with his family. You know, described himself as a teacher's pet, you know, and a voted most all around, voted most popular, most likely to succeed. You know, these type of people don't get AIDS. And when he was in his sophomore year, he went to a high school blood drive, donated blood, and then got a letter from the Red Cross saying his blood had come back reactive and didn't specify for what, just that he had tested positive for something. And after a couple of months, he finally worked up the nerve and got himself tested. His suspicions, you know, came true, which was he tested positive for HIV, and he was 17.
What made Pedro Zamora special as a person and as a friend?
I just enjoyed his company immensely. You know, at the end of the day, it really cracked me up. We just had a good time. People tell me that they're surprised at how funny the book is, and the funny stuff is just us being us. Pam and I were not friends with Pedro because he was living with AIDS and we thought he was triumphant. You know, we were friends with him because we loved him, you know, and we had a great time being around him. I don't think he ever knew the full effect of what he had accomplished and how much he'd reached people. And I don't think it was about that he was sick. And I don't think at the end it was about that he had died. That was a constant comment to people that he might have made a greater impact because he died. And those people didn't know Pedro. They didn't know that this was just the start and how much he was going to accomplish.
Pedro Zamora taught millions of TV viewers about being gay and living with AIDS before he passed away on November 11th, 1994. This has been Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
I don't believe in hatred. I don't believe in shame. But most of all, I don't believe that things will never change. You see, some of us look different and some of us don't care. Some of us are standing out so that people stop and stare.
Hi, I'm David Sedaris, suggesting you listen to This Way Out, the international radio show dedicated to the enjoyment of all our homosexual friends and neighbors.
Openly gay actor and activist Sir Ian McKellen has been in New Zealand most of this year for his role as Gandalf in the movie version of J.R.R. Tolkien's classic Lord of the Rings. He stopped by the studios of Wellington's Access Radio for a chat with Gay BC program hosts Hugh Young and Jim Waters about being an openly gay man playing the iconic wizard in the Rings saga, his role as Magneto in the extremely successful X-Men movie, and even more.
X-Men has broken a number of records worldwide and in the United States. It's taken a great deal of money guaranteeing there will be a sequel. But X-Men is a long-running 35-year-old comic strip readily available in the United States, where it's very popular.
Cult status?
Oh, no more than cult. Mainstream, absolutely mainstream. Probably more people in the United States have read or looked at X-Men than any other story you can think of. And quite consciously, Marvel Comics, who published the original and support the film strongly, are aiming the material at young gay people. Now, let me just explain. X-Men are people who, sometime in the near future, have developed a genetic strain which gives them a particular physical ability. My character, Magneto, is able to bend metal and control it. Others can turn their bodies into different shapes and so on. So, and they get into all sorts of scrapes. But anyone reading X-Men is likely to identify with these mutants, as they're called. And the two categories who do most identify, according to Marvel, with mutants are young Jews and young gays and lesbians. And so when Brian Singer, who had directed me in Apt Pupil, asked me did I want to play Magneto, one of the more powerful mutants, and explained he was interested partly in doing the material because being gay himself, he wanted to be involved in retelling a story that might help young gay people. That's really why I did it. It's odd, isn't it, to end up making a blockbusting Hollywood glamorous successful movie because we think it might help some gay young people. But so seems to be the case, I mean, according to my mail. And a lot of teachers are using X-Men to encourage discussion in the classroom, which very soon comes down to what it is to be different and therefore what it might be to be gay. Of course, any teacher who did that, had that discussion in a British classroom, would currently be breaking the law, Section 28, which forbids the positive discussion of homosexuality on the grounds that it might be promoting the same.
You say on your website, and we should mention the website www.mckellen.com, which would, I imagine, be an ideal place for young gay people to visit. That's very much part of its intention.
I hope so, yes. I set up the website simply as a substitute for writing an autobiography, which I've often been asked to do, and I thought an easiest way to do that was just to dump on in one place where people had public access everything that had happened to me professionally, and that part of the site is still being built up, but it is eventually going to be quite a good resource for those who are interested. But what happened is that people started writing to me, and when they started writing, being well brought up lad, I thought I'd better reply. And I can't reply to all the letters now, so not that they're screened, I see them all, and mostly about acting, a lot about Lord of the Rings, which is the reason I'm here filming in New Zealand at the moment. But equally, a lot of letters from gay people or people who are interested in gay subject matter as it relates to my professional work. And, you know, with sometimes a million people a week reading the website, I haven't had a single anti-gay comment or letter, not one. I think the world's changing.
Wonderful, wonderful. Can we say a little about The Lord of the Rings?
Some gay people think that one of the central relationships in the book between Frodo, the young hobbit who goes off on this quest to destroy the all-powerful ring, is accompanied by his gardener, Sam. Frodo being rather middle-class young gent and Sam being working class.
rough trade.
Seems to be setting up a situation with which we're familiar. And they are physically intimate with each other at times, in that they're clutched together on a cold mountainside. And that would be a way in which some gay people might interpret it. But you can't look at the rest of that very, very, very long book and think that Tolkien has any sense that two men might actually be attracted to each other to the extent of having sex with each other. There is no sex in Lord of the Rings.
I noticed that it
is an amazing achievement that anyone could write a whole mythology and not bring sex into it, or not dwell on it at any rate. However, a lot of people have written taking comfort that Gandalf should be played by an openly gay man, because Gandalf, for them, is an icon of the 20th century, and that an openly gay person should be playing this icon, without comment, as it were, from the people who are making the film, again, seems to these correspondents an advance. There was something on other websites of how appalling it was that an openly gay person should be playing Gandalf, you know, rather as if I were to play Jesus Christ or something. However, 33, wasn't he, and not married? I don't know.
Yes. Is time running out?
It is, actually.
I have a request.
What's that?
I would like you to read Prospero's Farewell.
Okay. This is a part of the last part I played on stage, actually. It was Prospero, and that was the West Yorkshire Playhouse in Leeds, in the north of England. And what is it that you like particularly about this speech?
Just the music of it.
Oh, I see. Yes. Prospero has celebrating the engagement of his beloved daughter to the young prince with a show put on by spirits, and then the spirits vanish, and Prospero says to his future son-in-law, you do look, my son, in a move sort as if you were dismayed. Be cheerful, sir. Our revels now are ended. These are actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and have melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherit shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
Ian McKellen, thank you very
much. Thank you both.
That was openly gay actor and activist Sir Ian McKellen with Hugh Young and Jim Waters in Wellington, New Zealand. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Chase Schulte, Graham Underhill, Matt Alsdorf, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, Martin Nell, Steve Pride, and Hugh Young and Jim Waters contributed program material. Sean Thomas performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation by Planet Out, from designated contributions by Uncommon Cloud Visa card holders who've chosen This Way Out, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. Remember, you can also hear This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. For Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WHUS Stores Connecticut, CFUV Victoria, British Columbia, KOOP Austin, Texas, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.